The reason people aren't financially free is they don't know what to do and they don't know where to start. I want you to join Joey and I at the Virtual Inner Circle Live, April the 4th through the 6th, as we share with you the exact answers to those questions. We only do this event one time per year. I don't want you to miss out. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter promo code podcast. When you're at this event, you're going to get your investor DNA. You're going to get access to up to 6 different passive income strategies. So you know, leaving this event, exactly what to do, taking our decades of knowledge so that you can start becoming financially free. Go to wealthwalkwallstreet.com/live and enter the promo code podcast.
Welcome to the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast, your guide to understanding how to get out of the Wall Street rat race and start your own mailbox money lifestyle. Now, don't let these handsome Southern draws fool you. These financial minds are teaching our country to enhance savings, increase cash flow, and create passive income, all without the help of Wall Street. Are you ready to break through? Now, here are your hosts, Russ Morgan and Joey Murray.
Welcome. This is the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Your host, Joey, the Italian Stallion Murray, joined as always by Russ, the idea guy, Morgan. Now, Russ, apparently that nickname is in limbo again.
You hate my nickname. Well, I mean, I think I really sort of like it. It really is very literal. I'm full of ideas.
You are that. Full of that. But the thing about this episode is a new nickname emerges. Potentially.
Maybe.
I'm excited about it.
There's an app out there. You may have seen this if you're a real estate investor. It's called Deal Machine. And we learn how the Deal Machine works, how you actually can go around town, look up potential properties to buy and see what sort of deal it is. And we were kind of big on the idea that maybe Deal Machine could be a substitute. My son had me as big time.
That's right.
And now Deal Machine, but I don't know. I think Idea Guy's just going to stick.
It probably will. But we want to hear from you. So if you think Deal Machine is better in the community, I want you, by the way, you can join that if you haven't already at community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
Have you not already joined? If you haven't, why?
There's no excuse.
All right. So here real quickly, this sidebar, I didn't expect us to talk about this, but go to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. Even better. You know what now, Joey, since we made it free?
What?
Do you know you don't even have to go to that long URL? You can go straight to the App Store.
That's true.
You can go straight to the App Store and type in Wealth Without Wall Street. Bang, it's free. You're in the community. You're rocking and rolling.
That's right. So as you're doing that, make sure you rate and review this podcast as well. Like, we absolutely want more people to hear what you're hearing on a weekly basis. And the best way for that to happen is for us to continue to move
up. No doubt. The amount of reviews that you have definitely increases its visibility. Speaking of visibility, I'm going to have to take this on a little bit of a sad note here, Joey.
Oof.
My dog, Rudy.
Rudy.
The French Pointer.
Yes.
The Brock Francais, which, by the way, I did find out is called Brock. I was calling it Broke because I thought he was making me broke from all the stuff that he was tearing up.
He was doing that.
But unfortunately, Rudy went missing. He's no longer with us.
Mm. But I thought you'd be excited about that.
You know, there's probably going to be a moment in the future I am going to be excited about it. Because I'll be like, look, that sprinkler head, it's working. But right now, I mean, it's kind of sad. It's like one of those things where I am a little bit upset. I mean, you know, like sometimes you take things for granted. They're always there and he's gone, man. He ran off. Unfortunately, we've had some issues at our house going on. And so my wife tried to send our 9-year-old out and, I mean, basically outweighs her. He saw something and ran off and she couldn't hold on to the leash. And it's been 2.5 days now. He's gone. And at this point, I'm saying goodbye to Rudy, unfortunately.
Mm. Well, let's hope he comes back. But if he doesn't, I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Well, moving on. Sorry to take you guys through that moment. We're going to pick you up a little bit here because today's guest is Brian Davis with Spark Rental. He's going to teach us how to buy unemotionally when it comes to rental properties, just through some apps and software and tools that he's been able to create through Spark Rental. And I was pretty interested by this interview, Joey, because as you know, you and I suck at buying real estate.
No doubt. Now, this is why I'm excited about this episode, among other things, is if let's say that you have taken control of your finances and you have started down this, picking the path, and you say, it's going to be real estate. I don't know a whole lot about it. You probably have some trepidation about what you don't know about being a landlord, about screening tenants, about background checks, about a number of different aspects of real estate ownership. And Brian really takes us on a journey of his own mistakes, and then subsequently how you can learn. We like to say you're paying wholesale instead of retail.
Yeah.
And I got so much out of this episode because of that.
Yeah, I think it was good to kind of hear what tools you can be using if you want to be active in the landlord world. Some of you are just really wanting to go straight passive, but I do think it's important to know how to do a job before you delegate it out. And I think this is a good episode as it pertains to long-term rental. So without further ado, goodbye, Rudy.
Bye, Rudy.
And hello, Brian Davis, and this interview with Spark Rental.
If you've been listening to our podcast, you're like, man, I love what you guys are talking about. I want to build passive income through one of these five pillars that you're talking about. But how do I do it? Stallion, tell them. It is so easy.
So easy that we created the longest URL possible. So you may want to write this down. Freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. Go to freecall.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com and you can set up your call with one of us. We're excited to talk to you.
Welcome into the show. We have Brian Davis of Spark Rental on the show today, man. So glad to have you.
Oh, so glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, love the fact that we get to learn about how to be a good landlord. Joey, if I could have learned how to be a good landlord a long time ago, I probably would invest in more real estate.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think the biggest thing you could have done is been a part owner in ServPro. And that would have been like you've taken your whole landlording experience in the next level.
Well, Brian, I have some poor landlord experience that I was not even a landlord in. I was farming that out. But had I known what you're going to be teaching us, because as we've been talking pre-show, I've been like, yep, that would have helped me. That would have probably helped me. But you weren't always an expert in the space. So this, you first started the hard way. You had to learn some of the tough lessons that many of us who are real estate investors have learned. And I want to take you back to one of those moments. I mean, I don't think it's worthwhile if we don't talk about something that happened that was hard, that changed our lives. So talk to me a little bit about some early experiences you had as a landlord.
Sure. Well, you know, I tell people that I've learned every single thing that I know about real estate, I learned the hard way. And none of it was learned the easy way by someone else telling me. So when I first graduated college, you know, I was 22, when I started working for a lender, and I was handling loans for real estate investors in particular. And this is back in the housing bubble. And I got super excited about watching all these guys make money. And I thought, well, I could do that. You know, I could go out and buy these properties myself. Right? And what's to stop me?
Right?
Yeah.
Why not?
So I went out and I bought a whole bunch of properties all in a row. I bought them way too fast. I did not know what I was doing. No one taught me how to invest in real estate. I just figured that I knew everything I needed to know because I had been working with real estate investors as a lender. So I bought all these low-end rental properties in Baltimore City, and I overpaid for them, you know, partially because it was the housing bubble in the mid-2000s, and partially because I didn't know what I was doing. And you know, the housing bubble, of course, burst, and I ended up stuck with over a dozen rental properties that had negative cash flow, that I had bad tenants in because I didn't know how to screen them properly. And I couldn't sell them because I was upside down on all of them. You know, I'd over leveraged them all. So, I mean, it was a nightmare scenario. And, I mean, you know, 10 plus years later, I'm actually just now, I feel like emerging from the trauma of that, you know, both financially and psychologically. So
Take me though through one of those properties, because there's always that one that just seems to stick out in our heads. That, like, that really happened? Somebody literally stole all the copper and tore out all the drywall of it before
they left and they hadn't paid me for the last 6 months. What was that one thing that you learned the hard way as a landlord? I mean, obviously you bought properties in bad areas. You bought properties that weren't cash flowing appropriately and all of those things. I mean, those are things that we know, but there were some tenants that just did some really bad things.
Well, for me, it was a house on Lexington Street in downtown Baltimore. And it was a property that I was planning on flipping, actually. So I bought it. It needed total renovation. So I went in there. I bought the property, overpaid for it. And when my contractor went in to renovate it, he got in behind the walls and discovered that all of the framing was rotten. So it actually needed to be reframed, which I had not budgeted for renovation budget. So that in itself, and that was many thousands of dollars right there, you know, renovation budget completely blown. And then, I mean, it just got worse from there. You know, as we got close to the end of that renovation, oh, no, I guess it was actually the first tenant that I got in there. Someone broke in to the air conditioning condenser in the backyard, ripped it all apart to steal the copper out of it, which, you know, so they're destroying a $3,000 piece of equipment to get $100 worth of copper. You know, it was one of those.
You would have gladly stuffed a $100 bill in there, just like let them find that and keep going.
Yeah, it would have saved us all some trouble. So, yeah, I mean, it was just one nightmare after another. I had tenants that didn't pay. You know, I didn't screen them properly, did not run credit reports and criminal background checks and eviction history reports and all, you know, all the tenant screening that you need to do if you want to protect yourself against defaulting tenants. And so it was just really one thing after another with that property. I didn't get to flip it because this was right in the beginning of 2009. The property values collapsed in that neighborhood because all the investors, their money dried up. So no one was buying there anymore. And homeowners weren't buying there because all of the easy homeowner loan programs dried up overnight. You know, those all got pulled by the government. So I couldn't sell it. So I ended up being stuck with it as a rental property when it was never actually intended to be a rental property. And I didn't run the cash flow numbers on it before buying as if it were going to be a rental property. So everything that could have gone wrong with that property did go wrong.
Mm. Okay. So Brian, I'm listening to you. Let's say I've been listening to Wealth Without Wall Street for some time. And I'm like, okay, these guys have got me fired up. I'm ready. to pick my path in real estate. This is going to be it. I'm going to be a landlord and I'm going to get started. And they just heard your story and they're like, maybe not, maybe not so fast. Like walk somebody back off that ledge and say, oh, wait a minute, there may be some hope. Talk to that.
All right. Well, the first lesson that we try to teach people on our blog and in our website and in the courses that we do is how to forecast cash flow. It's actually one of the greatest advantages to investing in rental properties is that the returns are predictable. So you can go in and you know what you're paying for the property, you know what you can rent it for, and you can estimate the expenses with very good precision. Problem is that most new real estate investors don't know how to estimate those expenses. So, for example, when I bought this property, first of all, I didn't even run the cash flow numbers on this property because I wasn't planning on using it as a rental. But even with my other properties, I did not run the cash flow numbers right. What you need to do to run those numbers accurately, it's very easy. You can learn it in 5 minutes. You need to estimate for not just the expenses that you will have every single month, you know, like your mortgage, that hopefully includes property taxes and insurance, but also those irregular but inevitable expenses that you're going to have as a landlord. So things like vacancy rate, for example. New investors never budget for vacancy rate and their cash flow forecasts end up being blown because of it. Things like repairs and maintenance costs. Again, these end up being significant. They don't hit you every single month, so people forget about them or they ignore them, but they're real expenses and they will hit you every year. So new landlords say, oh, well, you know, yeah, my cash flow got ruined this year because I had to put in a new furnace, but next year is going to be different. But then next year, you know, it's roof repairs or a new air conditioning condenser or whatever it is, you're always going to have these repairs and maintenance costs. So you need to budget for these before buying the property when you're running the cash flow numbers. Property management costs is another one that people always ignore. And a lot of new investors will say, I'm going to manage the property myself, so I'm not going to budget for property management. And that's wrong on several levels. One, you may not be able to manage that property forever. You might move out of state and not be able to manage it. You might have triplets in 9 months from now and not have any spare time to be running around managing a rental property. Or you might find you hate landlording and don't want to manage the properties anymore, even though you like the cash flow and you like the returns. You may not like the actual month-to-month management of the property. But even all that aside, it's still a labor expense. Whether you're doing the labor or someone else is doing the labor, you still have to account for it if you want to compare your returns on a rental property, which is only semi-passive income, to something that's truly passive, like say an index fund, right? You can go out and buy an ETF. That doesn't require any management whatsoever, but the same is not true with rental properties. And then of course, you'll have some odds and ends, miscellaneous costs that, you know, I usually budget 2 to 4% of the rent for as well. That, you know, they're real expenses, things like travel and bookkeeping and extra accounting costs. They do add up to, yeah, and they will eat into your returns if you don't budget for them.
So, you know, obviously you have lots of tools on your site. SparkRental.com is an area that Joey and I are looking at right now, and it's kind of showing us the multitude of things that are on there. So I'm assuming if I'm a new investor and I'm thinking about this stuff, and like you said, I didn't think about vacancy rate because I'm thinking about how much am I going to be renting it for, but I forget that there's going to be a time frame when somebody's going to move out, and before somebody moves in, there's a gap. And those, it's not like they, you know, it's not like WWE where they're tag teaming and and they got two inside the walls before one gets out, right? I mean, that doesn't work that way. So there is a gap. Talk to us a little bit about that. How do we? What is it that you tell people as far as a rate, as a percentage, or however you do it? Like, how should I account for that?
Sure. Well, for vacancy rate, we usually recommend a conservative estimate of around 8% of the rent, which comes out to about 1 month a year being vacant. Now, in hotter neighborhoods, you know, in hotter markets where there's high demand, you're going to see lower vacancy rates than that. You know, sometimes 2% or 4%, but you have to account for it. And when in doubt, estimate conservatively for these expense numbers. So we actually offer a free rental cash flow calculator on our website. You don't even have to sign up for anything. It's not behind a, you know, any kind of gate. So you can just go on there and play around with the numbers for different properties. But to answer your question about estimating vacancy rate, it varies by neighborhood, and you just need to go and do the research for that neighborhood. Talk to landlords who invest there, talk to property managers who work there, and get a sense for, and you can look at some public numbers as well. You know, the Census Bureau publishes vacancy rate numbers, but there's a lag on those. So, you know, you're looking at a year or two behind for those numbers.
I'm assuming too, the tenants that we're picking to put in our units also probably has a little bit to do with vacancy rate. I don't know the specifics of that, but is that true?
That is 100% true. So, my experience has been that in lower end neighborhoods, you have higher vacancy rates for several reasons. One is that there's just lower demand for housing in those neighborhoods. But you also end up with higher turnover rates in those neighborhoods. You know, people only live in super low end neighborhoods as long as they have to. As soon as they get a raise, they're out of there. So people are living in your property, not because they want to, but because they feel like they have to, which is never a good situation as a real estate investor and landlord. So you do end up seeing higher turnover rates in those areas, whereas in stable middle-class neighborhoods and, you know, upper middle-class neighborhoods, you see much lower turnover rates, which ends up meaning lower vacancy rates as well.
So let's talk about this for a second. There's a lot of potential mistakes that somebody could make in stepping into being a landlord. Let's talk about, from your experience, the people that you've seen do this successfully. Because I think there's a lot of trepidation. Somebody that's never done this before, they say, I don't want to be like that guy that Brian just explained.
Did you just point at me?
Well, no.
I think you just pointed at me.
That was like a just nobody pointing, just up at me. But they say they don't want to be that guy. They want to be the person that you've seen successfully step into being a landlord. Let's talk about, like, let's say the top five things that you know that they do well that will help kind of lower that risk.
Well, first, you know, as we just discussed, forecasting cash flow accurately. Because if you know how to forecast cash flow accurately, you'll never make a bad investment in your life.
Yeah, before you even buy the first place, you know ahead of time what you're getting into. So that's
exactly
huge. Okay.
So that's the first tip. Learn how to forecast any given property's cash flow accurately. And, you know, it is as easy as we've just discussed. You know, it's not complicated, it's not hard, but you have to know how to do it. So you have to, you know, spend 15 minutes learning how to do it. And then, of course, for each given property, you have to put in research into that property and that neighborhood, because the numbers do vary by property and neighborhood. So that'd be the first thing.
I don't want to simplify this too much. You're saying take 15 minutes to learn how to do this. Is that through some resource besides, you mentioned a calculator on your website. Is that the kind of resource you're talking about, or is there any other resources you would recommend somebody does to learn that?
Start with the calculator. It's interactive and it works, but below that, there's a full explanation of how to forecast, you know, the different expenses that landlords run into and how to forecast them. Okay. So learning how to do it is the easy part. Actually doing it for each property is the hard part. You know, a lot of people get super excited about a property and they sell themselves on it emotionally before they've actually run the numbers on it. So then they talk themselves into buying a property that they really shouldn't be doing. You know, real estate, unlike other types of investments, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, stocks and index funds, that sort of thing. People don't buy those emotionally, typically. They buy them based on the numbers. For whatever reason, people get emotional about real estate because you can see it and touch it and, you know, you've lived in it your whole life. So people think that they know how it works. They get excited about it, they get attached to it, but ultimately it's an investment like any other, and you have to run the numbers and you have to be disciplined about running those numbers and not making emotional investment decisions.
Okay, cool. So that's the first step. What about number two of successful landlording?
So number two, I would say finding good deals on properties. This is a little bit harder to learn how to do. It takes some work to do. You know, new investors, a lot of times they just go straight to the MLS. You know, they work with a realtor and just look at what's publicly listed for sale and publicly marketed. Those are usually not very good deals because anyone and their mother can go up and buy them, right? I mean, they're available to the public. The better deals are off-market deals, but those take work and they take knowledge to learn how to find and work to go out and actually do it once you have the knowledge. So things like driving for dollars, you know, where you go around and you look for vacant properties in a market that you're interested in, and then contacting the owners of those vacant properties. That's an oldie but goodie, a tactic for finding off-market deals. Nowadays, there are a lot of online tools and resources that people can use to find either vacant properties or properties that are in tax sale or in the foreclosure process. A lot of these services cost money, but you know, if you want it done for you, then you gotta pay for it, right? So there's a software that we like called PropStream that shows you in any given market distressed sellers of different types. You know, people going through divorce, people who are going through foreclosure, vacant properties, properties that are in tax sale, that sort of thing. So we like PropStream. Deal Machine is a good tool that people can use to help them drive for dollars. It's an app on your phone. You just point it at the property and it uses GPS data and visual recognition to actually pull up that property and all of the information about it, from equity in it, how much is owed on it, when they bought it, how much, owner's name. They also give you the owner's contact information, their phone number and mailing address. And if you pay extra, then they'll even send a postcard to the owner for you.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But again, you know, these are paid resources. You know, they're not free, but they are effective.
Joey, I see somebody driving by your house at this very moment, like taking a picture going, this dude didn't cut his grass. He probably don't live here. Snap. Your wife gets this picture and says, I told you so.
Yeah. Yeah. Babe, I'm sorry about those postcards. I'll cut the grass this weekend.
Yeah. All right. So
first one thing successful landlords do is forecasting cash flow. Second thing is finding good deals, which I love the fact that you gave us a couple good places to go. PropStream,
yeah,
and Deal Machine. Deal Machine, that's just a solid name.
I yeah.
I just like that. I mean, just get that on my phone. Just people are like, what you got? Deal Machine. Never use it, but that's a cool app.
Might change Russ's nickname now.
Deal Machine.
More.
I love it. All right. So what would be another successful thing that landlords would do?
You know, a lot of investors only look at their home market where they live, which in many cases, you can't find good cash flowing properties around there. Now, I hear this complaint a lot from people who live in like the Bay Area in California, for example, where, you know, you're not going to be able to find a decent property for under $1 million. And, you know, and those properties typically don't cash flow very well. As much as people complain about high rents in that area, the prices are even worse, you know, relatively speaking. So people get fixated on the market where they live. Whereas in today's world, there's nothing that forces you to only buy in your hometown, right? So there are tools out there to help you not only buy properties, but also manage properties that are long distance. So for example, there's a platform for turnkey rental properties to be bought and sold called Roofstock, where you can go and look at properties that are not listed on the MLS, but they're listed on this platform instead. And it's one landlord selling to another landlord, and they list out an incredible wealth of information about each of these properties. All kinds of market data and historical data, information about local school systems, for example. And they force sellers to get a home inspection done, and all that kind of stuff is done for you. So you can use these sorts of tools in today's world to buy properties long distance. I think the statistic that they said is that 62% of the transactions on that platform are between buyers who are more than 1,000 miles away from the property that they're buying. So,
wow.
Yeah. And, you know, you can, with the internet, you can look up wholesalers or turnkey sellers in any market, anywhere in the country or even in the world, and get on their mailing list and buy off-market deals anywhere in the country. So you don't have to buy in your home city. It's easier to buy in your home city. You can go walk the neighborhood and get a sense for what that market is like on your own, but you don't have to do it. And you know, there are, you can either hire a local property manager, or you can use an online landlord software tool like ours at Spark Rental, or, you know, there's others out there as well, of course, to help you manage it.
So this has really been helpful for us to walk through this. I think you're kind of expanding people's mind to consider things they may not have considered before. Let's talk about the two other things that I know if I'm a brand new landlord, I'm worried about. Okay. One, how do I make sure the application process is solid? Like, what am I not doing that I should have been doing? I mean, that's always going to be something in the back of my head. And then the last thing would be that background check, the credit profile of somebody. Like, what should I be looking for? What shouldn't I be looking for? Help us understand those two things, maybe to round out the top five.
Sure. So, you obviously want to advertise your units for rent as many places as you can. That's something that we offer on our service. You can enter the information. It'll get syndicated out to several websites like Zillow and Trulia and Hotpads and so forth. You can also build in an online rental application process to those listings. And when people apply to your property, you can select to include tenant screening reports and charge it to the applicants themselves. So you're not stuck with all those costs. But you do want to run credit reports, criminal background checks, and eviction history reports along with your rental applications. And
how does somebody even get to that? I mean, like, what is there, are those public records? Are they courthouse? Like, where do they go to even do that?
Oh, they go to our website. Oh, so this is something that we offer on Spark Rental. So yeah, we offer online rental applications. You can select when you send someone an application, you can select to include any or all of those tenant screening reports, and you can select who pays for them, whether you want to pay for them or you want to charge them to the applicant. And then as soon as it's paid for and the applicant signs off on it, you get the reports. But a lot of landlords, a lot of new landlords, where they run into trouble is they just look at the credit score, but they don't look at the context of what's actually in the credit report. And credit score can be deceptive. I mean, I've seen people with low credit scores who had, you know, who were pretty reliable people financially. And I've seen people with high credit scores who actually weren't very reliable. So what I look for in a credit report primarily is payment history on their recurring bills. Do they regularly pay their bills late? Or do they always pay every single one of their bills on time? So you want to look for a pattern of, are they the kind of people that come hell or high water, they make sure that their monthly bills get paid on time every single month? Or are they the kind of person that always has an excuse for, oh, well, you know, this month my dog got sick and, you know, whatever. So payment history is the number one thing that I look for. What I'm a little bit easier on in a credit report is one-time incidents that are unusual. So for example, someone going through a divorce is going to have a hard time financially, but that's it's an isolated incident. Another example is someone who has a one-time medical emergency. So they have an outstanding large medical bill on their credit report, but all of their other bills, you know, they pay on time. So one-time isolated negative events, I'm much more lenient on as a landlord screening tenants than a pattern of not paying your bills on time. And then I also want to make sure I run an eviction history report and see if any previous landlords have ever filed for eviction against them, because that gets to the heart of whether they are a good tenant or not. You know, have they failed to pay their rent or violated their lease in some other way to the point where a landlord had to file eviction on them? Now, the reports are just the beginning, though. That's tenant screening. From there, once you review someone's reports and make sure that they meet your minimum qualifications, you also want to call up their supervisor and their HR department and make sure they're actually employed where they say they are and earn what they say they earn. You want to call up their current and former landlords and see what kind of tenant they've been. Are they clean? Are they dirty? Do they pay their rent on time? And we always tell people to call not just their landlord where they live now, but also their previous landlord, because their current landlord, and we say, what's the fastest way to get rid of a bad tenant is to give them a good recommendation, right? And you know, stick them onto someone else. So you really want to talk to a former landlord as well, who has no vested interest in this. You know, they're a completely disinterested third party at that point. So talk to former landlords. And actually, as the final stage of the process, I like to go visit their current home and just walk through it with them and see how they live. You know, are they clean? Are they dirty? Are they hoarders? You know, I mean, you want to, because how they treat that property is how they're going to treat your property.
Oh, that's, no, I don't think I've ever heard that. So you set up an appointment at their house where they currently are.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that's labor intensive. So you only want to do that as the very final step, you know, yeah. When everything else about the tenant checks out, or the applicant rather checks out. I really like to do that, because that will give you some insight on how they will treat your property.
Well, but that makes so much sense. If I'm a first-time landlord, what you've just handed me are some really practical things that kind of take, there's never no risk, right?
Sure.
Investing in real estate, being a landlord, there's never no risk. But what you've kind of walked us through today is how to mitigate some of those things that are known potential issues, and to give us a little bit more peace of mind that we've done all that we can do. I mean, that's how I'm walking away from this.
Yeah. And one other thing you can do to mitigate your risk, particularly of rent default, is you can actually buy rent default insurance nowadays, where if the tenant stops paying their rent, you know, let's say they lose their job and they stop paying the rent, the insurance actually kicks in and starts making the rent payments for you, but for them, while you have to go through the eviction process and get them out and then get a new tenant in there. And it's not super expensive. I think for a typical, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 a month rental property, you're looking at like $350 to maybe $400 a year for a policy. So, you know, on a monthly basis, you know, it's pretty cheap, and it gives you that peace of mind that even if your tenants stop paying the rent, you're still going to be able to make your mortgage payment. And you're okay. Still going to get that cash flow.
So this is the first time I've ever heard of that, in particular insurance. What's required for them to issue a policy like that? What are you providing them in order for them to issue a policy?
It's surprisingly basic, actually. They need a copy of the lease, of course. They need a copy of the tenants or the tenants' background checks and make sure that they don't have like a 500 credit score. And if they want to look at your rent roll to make sure that the tenant has been making their rent to date, and you're not buying the insurance because the tenant is 3 months behind. But yeah, it's pretty simple. You know, there may be one or two other pieces of documentation that they need, such as proof they actually own the property. But it's a simple process.
Interesting. That's really cool.
Simpler than you'd think.
Well, Brian, you give it as a ton of great stuff: forecasting cash flow, finding good deals, managing property, different applications that we need to make sure we're taking advantage of, and the whole credit report, and then the default insurance. It meant great value today. Really appreciate it. So if obviously we're going to have you in the community next week, we're going to be doing a live Q&A. I'm sure there's going to be some people out there that are going to have questions and want to find out more about it. Until then, if they just over the weekend are listening to this and they want to go dig on your website, tell them more about how they can reach out to you and get access to what you're doing.
Sure. So it's sparkrental.com. Got a lot of freebies on there, free video course for investing in rental properties and using them to replace your 9-to-5 job. Got several free webinars on there on things like Airbnb and, you know, with a set of twins who reached financial independence in 5 years with rental properties. And of course, tools like the cash flow calculator. Sparkrental.com, check out our blog, sign up for our free course, and then connect with us on Facebook. You can reach out to us there at any time. My partner and I are super easy to reach. And we also have a Facebook group that's the largest group on Facebook for landlords. If you want, you know, community support as well, it's the Landlords, Real Estate Investors, and Property Managers Hub. It's the name of the group. Or you can just reach out to us on Facebook and we'll point you in the right direction. But yeah, please don't be shy. You know, send us emails, sign up for our courses. You know, there's a lot of free stuff on there and we'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I'm really grateful for your time and I'm looking forward to interacting in the community with you and helping you or having you help our folks continue to take the step to take back control of their finances, picking their path, maybe that it is in long-term rentals, and then to get there as fast as possible. So Brian, thanks again for being here and thank you for listening to this episode. We'll catch you on next week's episode. Dad, do you have to go to work today? If you're tired of having to answer yes to that question and you're ready to stop trading time for money, join Russ and I on this journey to financial freedom at community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com. This is the place where you can take control. You can pick your own path and get there faster. Go to community.wealthwithoutwallstreet.com.
This has been the Wealth Without Wall Street podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show to break free of the Wall Street mindset and begin building wealth on your own terms in places you understand so that your wealth will never run dry. See you next episode.